The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening and welcome back to our last class. Maybe it's a nice way to start. Start with any questions or comments or reports about meditation that you'd like to make. I enjoyed it last week when, after I prodded you about questions, you guys started. Maybe I don't have to prod you today.
Building up my karma here. Can you say a little more about thoughting? I tried to practice thoughting, letting it go.
Yeah, how'd that go for you? Say a little bit what that was like. And
The way I understood it last week is that instead of thinking or glomming on or sticking to it, just when the thoughts came up, just kind of letting them pass through and go again.
Right.
And that felt like a relief.
Oh, wonderful. So it felt like a relief to just not get involved in your thoughts, just let them come, not resist them, to give them a certain kind of freedom and just let them go. It's a great thing, yeah. That's one of the early things I learned when I started learning meditation, was to give a certain degree of freedom to my mind so I could think whatever my thoughts wanted to do, but not to get involved, just let them completely alone. And so then the thoughts just float right by. And I know some people who imagine that, recently I heard of someone who imagined his mind was kind of like a hallway with two doors, and they're open. And they just imagine the thoughts would come in and they go out the other end. The image helped him. But yeah, that's great. So it was a relief. Yeah. And so what happened during meditation?
It also happened during outside of meditation. But yeah, it just felt a little more peaceful.
A lot more peaceful. Can that? It's a great thing. Congratulations. Very good. Anything else?
So if it's a hallway, I have a very crowded hallway. Is there any way to thin them out a little bit?
You have to keep the doors open. This hallway has doors on either side that are open. If they're closed, then it gets more and more crowded because you keep producing more thoughts. But you have to let them through, let the breeze kind of blow them through.
But they're so, they just keep coming.
Yeah. Well, if you don't get involved in them, they'll quiet down. It's the involvement with them that keeps them spinning. So if we remember, I think I used the analogy of the settling the water in the pond, the muddy water. You have to leave it alone. But it's true. So if it's swirling and a lot of energy around thinking going on, then rather than expecting or wanting them to go away, you can go turn towards that swirl, that crowded feeling. And what does it feel like for you to have a lot of a crowded hallway, to have a crowded mind full of thoughts churning away?
Makes me feel like I spend most of my life just thinking.
Did you what?
I just spend most of my life thinking. Yes. That's the main thing that I do.
Yes. But if you go into what it feels like within your body or your mind, what's a felt sense of that?
Well, I was looking to see if I had a little headache here or tightness or anything. Nope.
Just churning away.
Big population.
So sometimes what you want to do when you see that is you want to establish your attention on the breath as if it's anchored there. And the idea of anchor, or some people, the idea of fixing or establishing or the attention on a spot like on the breathing, so that it overrides any tendency to keep churning out more thoughts. And then it all settles down. It's a little bit like taming a wild horse. I don't know if they still do it this way, but in the old movies, they take a post in the middle of the corral and you tie the wild horse to the post with a long rope. And then the horse goes wild, but it can only run in circles. And it runs and runs and runs until finally it gets tired and calms down and realizes it can't run away, and then at some point the trainer can come up to it. So sometimes when the mind is a kind of superficial mind that's spinning around a lot of thoughts, and it doesn't feel like any energy, any place in the body where there's tension, have a place where you tie your mind to with the breath and just keep it there, and then everything else begins to settle down. Make sense?
Hi. I'd like to get your reaction to a realization that I've had since I've started attending here, and that's that I realize for years I've been seeking out stimuli to drown out all the thoughts in my mind, you know, music or TV or, you know, video games or whatever.
And because those thoughts are uncomfortable for you?
Is there so much? And I didn't actually realize this until I started this class, mm-hmm. and that I actually don't need any of that. I can just let the thoughts go. And then I found lately that I don't need the music as much, or the movie or whatever. I just wondered if that's something you would expect to have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a way in which using external stimuli to drown out or distract you from the fact that the mind is busy might work and give some relief, but it also keeps a certain part of the mind active and busy also. And the mind can't relax as deeply as possible if you're always getting that stimuli. So to turn off the music and the TV and all that stuff and sit quietly is what's going to allow the mind to go get really peaceful.
I just want to say I really benefited from that exercise of finding where in the body my feelings are.
Yes.
Or, you know, when feelings come up when you think about something. That was really kind of cool because I realized there was happiness was right over the heart, and then there was a certain fear that was right here under the throat. And then I realized while I was going through my weeks, since we're doing this, it's like, oh, there's often this combination of I'm happy, but I feel it in both places, uh-huh. which would explain a lot of old issues, which is like, you know, don't trust too much because there, you know, if there's something good happening, there's always something bad attached.
So you have something good happening, feel happy, but then you tighten up in fear or
exactly.
mistrust.
Exactly, which is probably that grasping of like, you know, something bad could happen. So, and it was super helpful actually, and I'm going through therapy for a long time now, but that was probably more helpful than a lot of therapy, and it just opened up a lot of stuff. It was really cool. I can watch myself now. I can feel where it is, and it's for me, it's huge to be able to watch myself. So
great. Wonderful. I'm happy to hear that. Thank you. So I saw one more hand. Anyone over here? And then that can be the last one before we...
Thank you. So one thing I noticed was that I really enjoyed thinking as I was meditating or pretending to meditate. And I found, you know, the thing that I don't like doing is worrying, but thinking in a calm way, thinking about the meditation, thinking about the irony of getting insight without thinking, and things like, you know, just sort of philosophizing, if you will. I really enjoyed it, and I like it. I don't like to worry, but I do like to think, you know, so that's fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's a nice realization, and enjoyment can be one of the hooks to keep us attached, to keep us involved and engaged in thoughts. It's a wonderful thing. It's nice to be having that kind of enjoyment. It's nice to think creatively and in nice ways. And so I wouldn't want to take that away from you. I hope you keep that. But if you do that in meditation, you're shortchanging yourself. Because I think of it this way. If you're worrying about something and anxious about something, you probably won't have those nice kinds of thoughts. So if you calm down and relax enough to start having these comfortable thoughts, these nice thoughts, then the process of calming is working. But you're on a path to get calmer and calmer. But once you start getting involved in those pleasant thoughts, you've stopped the progress. But if you don't get involved in those thoughts, then the progress can go further. and there's a much, much better carrots waiting for you. There's much better things than what... So even though it's good, it's still second rate. So I have this feeling maybe if I offer you a carrot, you'll be willing to not be so involved in those thoughts and be willing to experiment to see what's even better beyond that. Maybe you'll take the bait.
Thinking is the best way to travel.
Thinking is the best way of?
To travel.
There was a Tibetan teacher named Trungpa who said, if you can't meditate, travel. So one more.
I notice that I get into this special place when I walk in this room, and particularly when we begin to meditate, and it happens much faster than when I'm at home. And I think that's really interesting. And so I was curious if you had any thoughts about that. And then the other thing that goes along with it is that when I meditate, when I really start to get into it, I have this interesting sensation in my face that I've never noticed before except in meditating. And it's sort of a tingling. But it's very interesting, and I notice that even before we start meditating in here, if I get quiet, if it's quiet in the room, I'll start to feel a little bit, but not as much as when we start to meditate.
Yeah, that's a known phenomena. So some people find it easier to meditate with a group. Some people find it easier to get focused and organized and directed on the meditation if there's some guidance, like a guided meditation. And some people find it's the opposite. Some people find it actually works better, easier for them to meditate quietly at home. So right now, it's easier for you to do it in a group. There's kind of this is what the purpose is. Everyone's doing the same thing. So it's easier sometimes to discipline yourself or be engaged if you're part of a group doing it. And then most of the time during this class, it's been guided meditation. And so that pulls you along and keeps you going and interrupts the wandering mind. You know, so regularly I say something that, you know, you come back easier. There's that. And then the tingling in the face. So you said that happens when you really get into it. Mm-hmm. And so as people get concentrated or as people get calm and quite settled, the mind is no longer distracted. There's an experience in meditation called unification. We start getting unified, a holistic feeling of being unified, collected. So usually the mind is divided, it's fragmented, its mind is spinning, thinking about a lot of different things. But when everything settles down and gets unified, collected, the concentration that comes with that sometimes brings along these symptoms of concentration or symptoms of being collected. And one of the most common places for those symptoms is in the face. Sometimes a tingling, sometimes a pressure, sometimes a sense of warmth or lightness. Some people will find that the corners of their lips get pulled up like a little half smile, and sometimes it can get quite strong. Sometimes it can start in one place and then spread through the body. Sometimes people feel it in other places besides the face, but around the mouth, around the forehead, are the most common places. So I would just take it as a good sign.
Oh, I do.
Okay. So thank you for those comments. So what we've done here for this week, these last 4 weeks, is explore mindfulness. And mindfulness is a very simple activity or function of the mind, which... is to pay attention, but to pay attention in a special way. To pay attention in a way that's a non-reactive, pay attention in a way that doesn't get caught up in judging what's going on or being for what's going on or against what's going on, but to clearly see in the present moment what's happening with a relaxed, open attention awareness, kind of simple recognition of what is. And it's to get a little bit of sense that it's an unusual thing to do, you just have to try it And most people find that the mind doesn't want to stay in the present moment. It wanders off a lot. Either runs off in thoughts about the past, the future, or in fantasy or something, or excessive commentary about what's happening now. But to very quiet, to let the mind become quiet in the present moment, or open, or receptive, or non-reactive, and then to be able to use that non-reactive clarity to see much more clearly what's here is part of the benefit of this kind of mindfulness practice. So to be able to, it helps us get calm and settled. And then in this calm and settled place, it's possible then to see aspects of our life, what goes on, how what functions in ways that is very difficult to see the clarity, that's very difficult to see in the rest of our life when the mind is busy. So it's possible to see much more greater clarity what's going on in our physical body. And if you remember in the second week, I talked about how important it is to be embodied, to be connected to your body, to be in your body. And the body is a tremendous repository of our feelings, our emotions, our reactions. There's a lot of information in our body. And there's a lot of our best qualities, empathy, courage, strength. They best operate when the body is awake, present, and there's awareness kind of through the body. We're aware of the body. So we learn to kind of have a heightened attention to the body without this reactivity and judgments and commentary. And then we also do that with our emotional life. And it's for some people it's a radical thing to turn towards emotions, whatever the range of emotions are, but allow them to be there without being for or against them. Some people have a strong tendency to be against them. Some people have a strong tendency to be for them, to believe them, to get involved in them. Some people are pushing them away. In mindfulness, we're not pushing anything away, and we're not holding on to anything or reinforcing anything, but having a calm, open awareness of what's happening, which allows us to see more deeply what's happening. And we learn to be, from a Buddhist point of view, we see deeply so we can become free of it. Not free that we're dismissing it, but free so that, in a sense, you're in charge rather than your emotions. And the same thing with your thinking. To have this calm attention to actually see the process of thinking rather than being pulled around by your nose, by your thinking. You know, thinking is in charge. Thinking is, you know, you just follow, your attention just follows your thinking, wherever, whatever you're thinking. And many people believe they are their thinking. You know, what else is there? But, you know, that's the center of who we are. But to actually step back and have a calm, mindful awareness of the process of thinking is a radical thing for some people because, as you said, someone said that you know, it's a relief not to be involved in your thoughts, let them go through. But it's also quite a revelation for some people to realize that they are not their thoughts. And, you know, there's something watching your thoughts. So if there's something watching your thoughts, there's something different than just my thinking. And if I'm not my thinking, then, you know, what's going on here? And it kind of opens up a door in the heart for some other way of being. And so the idea here is, with mindfulness, is to develop this capacity to have non-reactive, careful attention, calm attention to all aspects of our life. Some people associate meditation with like maybe only meditating on the breath or only having particular kinds of experiences. We try not to focus on having experiences when we do mindfulness meditation. Rather, we focus on mindful attention of whatever we're having, whatever the experience we're having. It's not like a particular experience we're looking for, but rather we're looking for a way of being present for whatever experience we're having. So if we're having a bad day, a rough day, and grumpy, and whatever, then we want to learn to use that mindfulness to be mindful of grumpiness. And just let it be that way, and explore it, be present for it in the body, the feelings, the thoughts. If you're having a good day, and you're feeling delighted, you do the mindfulness of that. And the idea is not to have when you do meditation, not to have a preference for one over the other. Not to prefer, it's kind of natural to prefer, but when we do mindfulness, we try not to prefer, because then you're leaning against something and you're resisting something else. To have this collected whole feeling where everything's included, we try not to prefer, but we try to learn how to be present for what is. If you prefer things one over the other, if you're acting on that preference, you're not really free. So the idea is to learn how to bring this attention to all aspects of our lives in such a way that nothing is left out. Nothing is outside of what we can notice and pay attention to while we're meditating. So meditation in this regard is not a cutting off of the world, but a relaxing and opening to the experience that comes when we're meditating, the world when we're meditating. So there's an analogy for this, it's a picture analogy that in certain ancient Buddhist paintings, the way that they depict a human being is that of a one-room house. And that one-room house has five windows and a door. And that's supposed to somehow symbolize the human being, because there's five senses. And then the sixth sense in Buddhism is the mind door, that which sees and recognizes our thoughts and what's going on inside. And so this has five windows and a door. And then to expand on this analogy, there's an easy chair in the middle of this one-room house. And you're sitting in the easy chair, relaxed and at ease. And the windows are open and the door is open. And as you sit there, just present and relaxed and paying attention, the neighborhood cat walks by the front door. And you see, because it's there, you see the cat. And it walks by and goes away. Then out through a window comes a bird and lands on the windowsill. And you see, while the bird is there, you see it. And then out another window, you see a dog chasing a different bird. And then you get up out of your chair and go out to chase the dog. And then out of another window, you see that, a friend is walking by. So you get out of your chair to call your friend in. So there's different modes of being. You can either stay in the chair and not do anything, just simply see what's appearing at the windows and the door, or you can leave your chair and get involved. Close the door if you don't like it. Go out and bring it in if you'd like it. So meditation is more like staying relaxed in that easy chair and noticing what arises at each of the sense doors and the windows. And just when it arises, letting it be without inviting it in and without pushing it away, without closing the door, and without, getting up and leaving. Does that make some sense? So when we sit, then different things can happen at these different windows and doors. You might be aware of body sensations. And so you see it when they're there, and we're present, but we don't leave the easy chair, we stay relaxed. Just recognize what it is. If what comes up is emotions, we just stay in the easy chair and just notice that's what's happening. If we have thoughts, we notice that. If there are sounds in the room, we notice that. If there are, whatever it might be, we just notice it. That's the task. And the training of this kind of meditation, it's a training. It takes a while to learn how to do this, is to remain in your easy chair, to remain calm and relaxed about what's arising. And if you can begin learning this in meditation, then you can learn the art of being less reactive or non-reactive in a healthy way to what goes on in your life as you're living it. So with that as an introduction, I thought we would try the easy chair, try to meditate. And so taking a comfortable, upright posture, giving some attention to the contact of your sitting bones, your chair, or your cushion, and adjusting your posture so the weight of your body feels like it travels squarely down on your sitting bones. And adjusting your spine so that it feels like your spine is aligned, going straight up. If you're sleepy, you could try keeping your eyes half open, kind of looking down the floor in front of you. And then to begin, it's useful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Breathing in deeply, letting your rib cage expand. And when you exhale, to relax, settle in. Settle into your body. And then letting your breath return to normal. With a normal breathing, scanning through your body to see if there's any easy place in your body that you can relax and soften. Some people can soften around their eyes and forehead. Some people in their jaw. It might be possible to relax the shoulders, soften around the shoulder blades. And it might be possible to soften the belly. And then in whatever way you can, see if you can set yourself at ease. Let yourself be at ease in your body, perhaps by letting go any way in which you're bracing yourself, holding yourself unnecessarily. And if you feel uneasy in your body, be easy with that. Ease up. And then see if you can be at ease in your mind. Perhaps softening and relaxing the thinking muscle. Relaxing worry, planning, wanting in the mind. Or if the mind is uneasy in some way, that's okay. Perhaps you can be easy with that. Ease up. And then see if you can put yourself at ease in your heart, letting the heart settle in, open up, perhaps with a sense of trust, it's okay. Or if you feel uneasy in your heart, be easy with that. So for this meditation, I'm going to guide your attention to different areas. And as I guide your attention, experiment with letting your attention move in a calm and relaxed way. So first, in a calm and relaxed way, bring your attention to the place in your body where you feel your breathing the most. The movement of the chest or the belly. Sensations of air going in and out through your nostrils or down your throat. And in that area of your body, see for a few moments here if you can keep a calm, relaxed awareness, noticing what it's like to be breathing at this time. And now, calmly and relaxedly, staying in your easy chair, notice the strongest sensation in your body, as if it's okay, if there's nothing to do except know it, feel it. Feel the strongest sensation in your body. If it goes away, you can find the next strongest sensation. If it stays, be at ease with that. Just stay with it, feel it, get to know it. Experiment with being at ease. Easy attention. And now, in a calm, easy way, open your attention up to be aware of the sounds around. Whatever the sounds might be, see if you can let them arrive in your ears in a calm, relaxed way. Now see if you can calmly notice what you're feeling. What's the emotional tone or quality of your experience? Your mood, your mental attitude, the emotion that's present. And can you experiment with staying easy? Just notice clearly without straining or pushing. Without judging, whatever it might be, just recognize it. And then bring your attention to calmly be aware of your thinking. Calm, easy recognition of what thinking as it occurs. Experiment with being okay with it, whatever is going on. Your job is simply to notice, to not be pulled into anything. And then calmly let your attention settle once more on your breathing, on the way the body experiences breathing. If it helps to get established, you can take a little bigger, deeper breath than normal just to reestablish the connection. If there's just easy thoughts that carry you away, let go of your thoughts. Every time you exhale, remember to let go. Let your thoughts just float by and return to your breathing. So keep the focus, keep yourself anchored in your breathing. Stay present, easy, relaxed, but keep coming back to your breathing. But if something else becomes more predominant, more compelling, then you can let go of your breathing in a calm, relaxed way. Be mindful of this other thing. If body sensations, or if it's sounds, or if it's emotions or thoughts. It's all okay. But the task is to be aware and mindful, to step back from it in a sense, and see it clearly for what it is in a non-reactive way. And once it's been acknowledged or seen clearly, then perhaps you can begin again with your breathing. you're drifting off in thought, begin again with your breathing. Or step back and clearly recognize that you're thinking. Relaxed, open, accepting, non-reactive awareness. If there are body sensations, if there are feelings, impulses, if there are strong desires or aversions, experiment with calmly and clearly, recognizing that's happening, being present for the experience without being reactive to it or caught in it, seeing it. So finally, in the last minute of the sitting, if you haven't done so already, be mindful of how you are, of your reaction to what's going on. So that also is known calmly, freely. And then to end the sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So it's said that mindfulness is useful everywhere. So in any circumstances you find yourself, however agitated you might be, however calm you might be, that mindfulness can be useful there. And one of the reasons so useful is it helps us to see how we're reacting, how we're caught by what's going on. So for example, if you're very, very agitated by something, then you would be mindful of your agitation. In that mindfulness, you'd notice that you are really aversive or hate your agitation. And you'd learn then through mindfulness to just be agitated without hating it. Or you might notice that you are having some wonderful, delightful planning thoughts, this wonderful thing that's going to happen. And you would clearly notice that you're planning this way with delight, and you see the way, and you notice that you're leaning into it. And you see that the planning and the leaning into it are two different things, and then you leave the leaning into it alone, and just kind of let the planning be there. Or you can get very, very calm and centered, and you might see more deeply, not just that you're agitated, you might see the calm, and you might see your reaction to the calm, and you can just leave it alone. You don't have to you don't have to get involved. And there's a tremendous power and strength that comes when we're in charge rather than our mind. Or when we're free enough not to be pulled around by our thoughts, our impulses, our feelings, our reactions, because we can see it so clearly. And in the seeing, we're not it. It's a little bit analogous to stepping back and looking at something, and not being part of it, but seeing it clearly for what it is. So an analogy, I don't know if it works for you, but is if you're at a party with a lot of people and they're, you know, having a lively, intense conversation, maybe arguing about politics or something, and you're part of the fray and part of the arguments, and everyone's trying to talk on top of each other, and there's very little self-awareness going on because people's opinions are so important in getting them across and yelling it. But then maybe you have to go to the bathroom and you come back and they're still at it. But because you're not in it, you can stand on the edge of the crowd and you can watch, wow, they're really intense. They're really lost and engaged. They're not listening to each other. And you know now that you're not engaged, you're not entangled. You step back and you're watching it. And a very special moment might be if someone else has also done the same thing and your eyes meet and you recognize each other as being someone two people who recognize that they're free, they're not caught in the fray, they step back. So this mindfulness practice is partly a practice of a little bit stepping back from our experience to be relaxed, be at ease, but not to push away or not know it, but to see it through the filter of that relaxed kind of way. But not just for the purpose of being relaxed or calm, but also the purpose so you can see more clearly what's going on in this world of ours. And it's not so easy to see clearly. So here is an example of some of the, I think, the power or the usefulness of mindfulness to separate out or distinguish the different aspects of what's going on that is often bundled together, always mixed up together. We can't see it. And so it's very confusing. So I'm going to hold up a flower. So this is a flower. So it's an ordinary, relatively ordinary flower, right? Just a flower. And as a flower, like this, you see what in Buddhism is called the suchness of the flower. Just the flower as it actually is by itself. Just a flower. So you see a pretty flower, you see it, right? So that's nice. But now, I can do something interesting. I can bring up this flower here. You see it? Now, we can say something that we couldn't say before. Now we can say that this is the big flower and this is the small flower. My right hand is a small flower, right? And this is the big flower. You see that? That's pretty easy and straightforward, right? Now watch the magic. You're going to see the trick of the hand. So there's no secret here, but watch this, right? Big, small, right? Big, small. Which is the big flower now? So now, what was big before is now the small flower. You see that? Isn't that amazing? I mean, nothing changed in this hand, right? That's like magic. How did he do that? Should I show you again? The point here is that things like big and small are not inherent in the flower. They belong to the world of comparative thinking, which means they belong to the world of ideas and the concepts that our mind makes. There's some truth to the idea, but they're relative concepts. So what happens, so when you sit and meditate, or get quiet or very mindful, you can start watching and seeing how the mind makes concepts, how thoughts arise, and you can see there's a difference between a flower and the idea that it's a big or a small flower. Because that's something added on top of the suchness of the flower. So when we apply this to human beings, to ourselves, much of human suffering arises out of this kind of thinking, comparative thinking. So I'm too big, I'm too small, my hair is this way compared to other people, it's too short, it's too curly, it's, my nose is too big, my nose is too small, my eyes are this way, you know, or I'm smart, I'm stupid. There's all these comparisons we make. And we take that to be who we really are. But they're just comparisons. So if I come and tell you that I'm a really good basketball player, well, you probably feel happy for me, right? But then you say, if you're smart, you say, compared to who? And I say, well, you know, the six-year-old neighbor I have. And then, that puts it in one context. But if I say, compared to, who's a good basketball player these days? Kobe Bryant, is that a player who's good these days? There's a guy named, I'm going to tell you. Then it's a whole different comparison. If I say I'm a lousy basketball player, compared to what? It's not inherent, what do you compare yourself to? And so a lot of human suffering, a lot of the way we get depressed, get upset, and get stressed, is not inherent in any situation, but has to do with the overlay of the thoughts, the concepts, ideas we've added to it. And our society helps us to do that as well. One of the reasons why meditation is so stress-reducing is that we're quieting down this conceptual overlay, this thinking and comparison that we do in daily life. We do it incessantly and continuously. But in meditation, you learn to quiet that down so it's not operating so much. And then you can see, rather than seeing yourself as being big or small, or whatever the category is you're comparing yourself to, you can see yourself or experiencing yourself in the suchness of who you are. And the suchness of who you are is independent of how old you are, independent of the gender you have, independent of your social status, independent of your bank account, independent of the job that you have, independent of your family status, where you fit. All those, are certainly relevant in a certain kind of way, but all those belong to the world of big and small that I pointed to in the flower. They all belong to the world of concepts and ideas that we swim in and live in. And because they're such a common part of our life, we think they're integral and essential part of human life. Sometimes they have their role, but they don't have to be there all the time. It's great to take a vacation. And it's great to have a mind that's free enough that you can put it all down when it's not needed. And so as we do this practice and go and do this careful mindfulness, present for what is, relax, settle down, let go of our thoughts, come back, slowly what you'll learn, what you'll find at some point, you'll see that you'll experience a way of being in the world, a way of being alive, which is independent from all these judgments and concepts and ideas that cause so much trouble. Does that make sense? So at this point, do you have any questions or you want to say something about what that last meditation was like for you? Anything you'd like to say? I'm curious about what the meditation was like, the easy chair meditation. Did it make some sense or... Remember the karma thing? Yes, please.
I was just wondering if you would comment on sometimes when you meditate, you can become really tired and to sort of fight the urge to fall asleep.
So in meditation, sometimes you get really tired, and what do you do about that? So it's pretty common, especially this time of day, to get tired. There's different reasons people get tired. Sometimes because they don't get enough, they're exhausted. Sometimes because they don't get enough sleep. Sometimes because of food or other issues of, that might happen. Sometimes, if you're really, really tired in meditation, maybe rather than meditating, you should go back to bed. And it may be more useful. But if you want to meditate with the tiredness, which is a very interesting thing to do, what you would do is you would turn your attention, if that's what's happening, you're so much that you feel like you're fighting it, you don't have to fight tiredness. What you do then is you turn your attention and be mindful of what it feels like to be tired. You'd go explore where in the body are the sensations of tiredness. How do you know? What's telling you that you're tired? Is it sensations around your eyes and your cheeks? Is it the quality of the energy in your body and you can't hold yourself up? And what does it feel like in your body not to hold yourself up? What's falling? What's collapsing? What's it like not to have the inner kind of chi operating? And then what's the mind like when you're tired? And, you try to just drifts off. You can hardly try bring your... You can maybe almost get that to the breath, but you kind of drift off. And the mind feels like a swamp. It feels really spongy or heavy or muddy, like a muddy swamp or something. And you can start to bring your attention to feel that. And then because if it feels unpleasant, you can be mindful of your reaction to it. I don't like it. I want it to be different. I have all these judgments. I'm supposed to be awake. Then you're back to the big and small thing. There's a right way of being, there's a wrong way of being. And you can see all the ideas of right and wrong, what's supposed to happen. And you can see all, just study all these things. And so some people find that if they do that, they wake up, they get curious. Wow. And so rather than fighting it, often in meditation, as soon as we fight something, we're in trouble. And usually counterproductive to fight anything in meditation. But rather, the idea is to just kind of open up to it and explore it, get to know it. So that's one thing, right? That's what we do when we use mindfulness. You can do some tricks so that, you can sit up straighter. And if you're really tired, what some people do is they do standing meditation. So you do exactly the same meditation, but do it standing. And that brings some energy, and also the consequences of falling are so much greater. Yes, there's a car?
So there's a car blocking the driveway right across the street, a silver Saab. Is it anybody?
What kind of car?
Silver Saab.
A silver Saab. So where was I at with sleepiness? So we want to bring... standing. So you can stand, and because it's so far to fall, most people, will stay awake. And some people, instead of doing sitting meditation, do walking meditation. And one of the handouts for today is instructions for walking meditation. And that keeps you awake and energy going, and you keep doing the practice. The last thing to say about sleepiness for now is that occasionally sleepiness is not a sign of tiredness, but rather it's a strategy, psychological strategy, to not pay attention to something. That's a form of resistance, a form of lethargy, a form of giving up, a form of fear sometimes, and we shut down. And so one of the interesting questions in that circumstance to ask oneself is if I wasn't sleepy, what would I be experiencing? And if it's sometimes if it's a strategy to avoid something, that question sometimes will bring forth, then I have to face my fear, and then I have to face something, and then you practice with that. Make some sense? Yes, please. Mike.
Myself having a really hard time staying awake. Is this on?
Yes, just get all the close to your mouth.
And I believe it's like a regulatory thing, a low level of arousal generally. I need a lot of sensory input to stay alert.
Yes.
And I think I'm going to have to try that walking.
Yeah, you can do that. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So you can try walking, get more stimulus. But you know, sometimes it's a transition period, and some people have become really habituated to using external stimuli to keep them going and fueling and going. And so, if they don't keep fueling themselves with activity and conversations and television and radio and all that, and you know, it's very easy in our society to always have things coming in and to have the energy going. Then a person hasn't learned how to have a natural energy and presence on their own, and so they have to keep reinvigorating themselves with external things. And so if you stop the external stimuli, it's kind of like sometimes like stopping taking coffee. You know, coffee keeps us going, but if you stop coffee, there's a withdrawal period and a transition period that for some people takes 3 days. And if you stop being overly stimulated by the environment and all this stuff, you might have to give yourself some days or some period of time until things get re-regulated, resettled out, and a more natural alertness and wakefulness come up.
I also use breathing technique to fall asleep every night. So.
Oh, so you're using sleep to.
You know, conditioned stimulus there too.
I see. Uh-huh.
I just train on my breathing, and I've been doing this for months now since I had a child, and it really helps myself and her fall asleep if I make, you know, audible breathing sounds. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so maybe it's a habit. So maybe if you meditate with your eyes open, maybe that can make a difference. Over here.
I have that sleepiness as well, because I always get up at 5 on Wednesdays, and so it's a long day, and today I pushed a workout in, which is not so super clever, because then I need to eat. So I work out and I eat, and then I come here and I'm super tired. And it was really cool, actually, because I decided to not beat myself up over being tired and did exactly what you said. I just concentrated on it, especially when I started to fall over to the front. So I sat on the floor, which is a bit safer, and I started to go towards the floor, and that jerked me up again. And then I looked into it. What was really nice was that my mind is so toned down because I'm sleepy, that I can't get into many things. So sometimes
couldn't get in trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So for me, it's sometimes good when I'm either confused or or too tired to get in trouble. Uh-huh. So actually, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Great. Great. Can you give it behind you there?
What I find a lot is that as I get into the meditation, even though my eyes are closed, when I settle into it, it seems as if I get like a white light, and what I'm conscious of, what I sense, is that even though my eyes are closed, it's almost like my eyes are drifting upward.
Could be. And that's why you have the light, you mean?
Well, it seems almost as if I'm looking more towards that light.
Up above, yeah. It's possible, but it's just like the woman earlier talked about having tingling in her face. So another one of the symptoms or signs of concentration and deep calm is a kind of a luminosity or light. And then the field in front of us sometimes, the whole field can seem very bright, and even it can be a dark room, and suddenly it seems really light behind the eyelids. Sometimes it's white, sometimes golden. Occasionally people see it in color. And so that can happen, and I just take it as a good sign. And since the practice of mindfulness is simply to notice what's happening without reactivity, without preferring, without making any stories about it, just, seeing them, you know. We just heard the train, hearing, seeing. So for a moment, then go back to the breathing. Yes.
Is there such thing as driving meditation?
Is there such thing as driving meditation? Well, for that, I'd like to call it driving mindfulness, driving mindfully, because, and I think that makes us a better driver, to be mindful and attentive. You don't want to close your eyes and meditate when you're driving, but But, you know, it the whole world wants you to be in the present moment when you're driving, right? It helps. So you want to be present. And then you want to be present and attentive to what's going on around you, with yourself and around you. Notice what's happening with you is very important, so you don't end up suddenly doing road rage. You know, you can watch and notice what's going on. And notice your reactions and responses. There can be a lot of stress that builds up in driving. And if you're mindful and present, you can notice the tension, the holding that goes on, the attitudes you have when you drive. And it's possible to arrive where you've gone to much calmer than when you started if you stay present for the act of driving. And so yes, you can do it. And I, many years ago, I used to listen to the radio when I drove, and I did the experiment. I tried some days with the radio and sometimes out without. And it was interesting because with the radio, there was a kind of pleasure, and you know, kind of pleasure or delight, or felt like I was reading, listening to news. I was getting important information. It felt good and important, you know. And so there's a kind of leaning forward or wanting it. Whereas if I didn't do any the radio, I wasn't getting anything, right? I wasn't being stimulated. I wasn't benefiting from it. I was just driving a car. You know, what's more boring than that? But what I found was that even though the listening to the radio was pleasant, I arrived where I was going calmer and more settled and more peaceful if I didn't listen to the radio, but practice mindfulness and presence for when I was driving. Okay, so one more. Yes.
It seems that one might get more calm during meditation and experience less suffering, but then also less joy. Or you kind of calm all the time. You are not as joyful as before.
Depends on the nature of the joy. Because there's many reasons why people feel joy. And some of them are not very good. And so, you know, you know, if you're a high-powered executive and you just love lording it over your employees, you can feel a lot of joy in the power you have, right? But that's not a really healthy joy. And the point of this meditation is not all... Calm is a byproduct of meditation that's very helpful, but the point of this meditation is not to become always a calm person, but rather someone who can be very present. And being present for the experience, what's happening is the point. And so if you're present, then your inner emotional life will respond appropriately according to what's happening around you in a healthy way. You won't be reactive, but your emotions will be responsive. Reactive emotions tend to get us in trouble. So like anger and fear and strong desire are considered reactive emotions. Compassion, love, generosity are responsive emotions. The difference is that, one, there's more freedom while we do it. It's more of a choice. One is a choice and one just arises and we get pulled around by it. So kind of reactive joy tends to become less and less. But responsive joy actually becomes stronger. And most people who meditate will feel that life becomes more and more joyful and easier and lighter. And some of the greatest forms of joy, some of the most intense and most the highest peaks of human capacity for joy are found in meditation. But the door to that kind of intense joy, people talk about rapture and ecstasy, the door to it is getting calm. The ticket. So I would like to say a few things. Can you wait? Or?
I have a question.
Okay.
What about, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
What about introducing thought into your meditation?
Yeah.
Like, I feel joy and feel that feeling throughout your meditation. Is that a different kind of meditation?
If you're having joy when you sit and meditate, then you have a very simple, just innocent thought is recognize you're having the joy and then feel it, and that's doing the meditation. The mindfulness meditation. If you're sitting there and just feeling something different and you say, you know, I want to feel joyful, and then you think joy, just to evoke it, that wouldn't be mindfulness, because then it is a different meditation, because mindfulness is not willing anything, it's not making something happen, but it's just staying present for what is. And the reason we like to do that is that most people try to stay in control of their life too much, and are trying to fix and make things happen and follow their preferences and choose one thing or other and avoid what doesn't feel good. And there's certainly a time and place for that, but you don't become a free person by always doing that. To become really free and really find the deeper capacities of peace, you have to learn how to be at peace with what the conditions are, whatever's going on, rather than fixing them or doing something. So in mindfulness meditation, we're not trying to make a particular experience, we're just trying to be present for the experience we have, and then let it unfold from there. So we wouldn't evoke joy, if that's what you meant. Okay, so the question about driving is a nice one to what I want to say now, because mindfulness in being bringing present attention to what our experience is when we're meditating doesn't have to be limited to meditation. It can be something we do in all our life. In fact, I'd feel a little bit sad if people only learned mindfulness, you know, closing their eyes and being, you know, meditating, because it's really meant to be also be applied into our life as a whole. And it's one of the joys of this practice is to start applying this mindfulness, heightened attention to the present moment, in the course of our daily life as well. And you know, it can be something quite simple, where it might be nice when if you go to work, in the hallway or in the parking lot, or just a minute or two before starting your work, is you check in with yourself and be mindful and notice how you actually are, because then you're much more going to be less likely to be influenced negatively by how you are, because you've noticed I'm grumpy, I'm tired, I'm sad, I'm excited. And then because you really acknowledge and seen it, then you can take a little more responsibility or care about how you respond and react to the world around you, because you're not going to be impulsive through those things. So you can take a minute or two. It can be done very quickly. Go to the bathroom and check in and be present. Notice where you're at, and then come back more attentive and more aware. Or if the telephone rings, most people, I mean, I don't know how common this is, but I've noticed in myself there's sometimes this kind of strange feeling inside that somehow it's very important to answer the phone with the least number of rings. Like you have to get there, and I don't know what's going to happen but even to let it ring 4 or 5 times, most people don't hang up that quickly. But to let the telephone ring and then be mindful and check in with yourself. What's happening? Where are you at? What's happening with you? And what are you feeling? Breathe. Maybe take one breath to relax. And then answer the phone. And then when you answer the phone, you might find you're much more present for the conversation. A kind of presence that includes awareness of where you're at. And then you might notice more carefully what you're about to say, how you're feeling, how you're being impacted by the conversation. So there's many, many situations in daily life where daily life is enhanced or benefited from not thinking a lot and not reacting a lot, not having a lot of commentary or judgment of what's going on, not being swept around by our feelings and our emotions, but clearly seeing what's happening, being so clear and see this is what's happening now, and this is what's happening now is so clear that we find a certain kind of freedom or independence from it rather than being pushed around by it. So I've known people who have done all kinds of little tricks throughout the day, little reminders to be mindful. So some people I know use a certain... I've known people who put stickers, these little round stickers, and they put it all over their house. And every time they see the sticker, they say, "What's happening now? What's happening now?" I've known people who have used particular things like light switches. Every time they turn the light switch on and off, they don't just turn it on impulsively, but they use that as a mindfulness reminder to know what's happening right now. And what often happens when you do that, you notice my mind is just racing, I'm thinking about tomorrow and what I should have for dinner, and you know, you're not really present. And so it gives you a chance to really be present. And then you have the number of these through the day, just be present. I've known people, and what I've done is sometimes it's chosen particular activities, like for a week, and to do them not habitually, not automatically. Don't do them to try to get them done as quickly as possible, but do them kind of like a meditation where you do it to learn how to be really present for that experience. So like washing dishes. So not to get over as quickly as you can, not to watch TV while you wash dishes, but to just wash dishes. Be present for the dishes. Here's a story for you. One of the great teachers in our tradition is a woman named Kamala Masters. Lives in Hawaii. And she got interested in this meditation practice, but she had four kids, and she was a single mom. And somehow or other, through a miracle, I don't know how it happened, she was able to go on a meditation retreat with an Indian teacher. And it was great, meditation. At the end of the retreat, the teacher said, in order to continue this, it's important to meditate every day. And she went up to him and said, you know, I can't do that. And he said, of course. He's a celibate monk, right? So what does he know? And so he said, of course you can. Everyone can meditate every day. The more you set aside some time and use a little bit of discipline, and you can do it. He said, no, I can't do it. Not possible. So she had enough wherewithal that she said, she invited him to come and live with her for a while. So he came and stayed at her house for a week, I don't know how long, and kind of just watched how she lived her life, and single mom with four kids, right? And getting all ready for school and everything. And then she had to work, too. She worked full-time. And after a few days, he said to her, you're right. And so then he said to her, okay, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you how to be mindful in your activities. And so he would do the dishes with her. And when you do the dishes, you're really present here for the dishes. Just like you would, mind wanders off, you come back. You have strong feelings, you be mindful of that, and you come back to the dishes. Just be present. And then she had a hallway in her house that connected all the rooms in the house, apparently. So she would often be, you know, walking through that hallway to get to another room. And he said, this hallway is your meditation hall for doing walking meditation. Every time you step into this hallway to go somewhere, even if it's one or two steps, use that as a time to connect to yourself, to be present, notice what's going on, rather than just letting your mind spin and rush ahead. So she was raising these kids. And so I don't know how many years, but for many years, she then practiced. She didn't go on retreats again. She practiced just in her daily life in this way. Whatever she was doing, she would try to be really present for that, really present for that. And eventually she was able to go on a retreat, and her kids grew up. And now she's one of the highly respected teachers in our tradition. The foundation of her practice that she really attributes her practice to was this practicing daily life. So all the things I've taught during these 5 weeks apply to daily life as well. You want to be in the present moment with what you're doing. Maybe instead of being present for your breath, come back to your breath, you come back to the dishes, you come back to your driving, you come back to the conversation you're having with someone. You come back to whatever activity you're doing to really be there for it. And then you might notice that it's hard to do that because there might be strong emotions. And you do emotion meditation. There might be a lot of thinking going on, churning away. You hardly heard what the person said because you're already planning your response. And you notice, I'm thinking a lot, and then maybe take a moment to notice your thoughts. There might be a lot of interesting body sensations going on in daily life. What you do with your body in daily life is very useful information. To notice your posture, to notice your stance. A lot can be seen there. So it's very useful to keep coming back, practicing daily life. What we find is that, you don't have to do that, of course, but what we find is that practicing daily life supports meditation practice. Meditation practice supports the practice in daily life. If you're practicing mindfulness through the daily life, then there's less stress that builds up through the day. And then when you sit down to meditate, You don't have to process the stress. You don't have to kind of discharge it and relax as much. As you get more deeply into the meditation, more relaxed, more present, then you're more less likely to get caught by stress, caught up in reactivity in daily life, and then also makes it easier to be present. So the two go hand in hand. They reinforce each other. It's quite a nice thing to do. So as we come to the end of the class, I'd like to say that a few things. It can be difficult to maintain a regular meditation past practice. It can also be difficult to feel encouraged to keep it going for a number of reasons. Sometimes because it can be difficult. Sometimes because meditation changes you in certain ways that doesn't quite fit into your life as usual. People who do meditation tend to become more ethical. Like a common thing people come to me and say, that they've been meditating for a while, they say, and I have a challenge. And the challenge is at work. I'm no longer interested in gossiping. But that's the currency of conversations at work. Everyone's gossiping. And now I don't fit in anymore. So sometimes people who meditate, they change their values, change how they want to live their life in a certain kind of way. But if you're the only, if you don't know anybody like that, you might think that you're weird. So it's helpful in order to keep it going and have a regular practice is to, from time to time, to go find others to meditate with. So a group up and down the peninsula is a variety of sitting groups now. You're always welcome to come here, but there are sitting groups in San Jose and Mountain View and Palo Alto and Half Moon Bay and, you know, I don't know, there's all kinds of places there are sitting groups, Los Gatos. And if you can't find a sitting group, meditation group near your house, near close by, maybe there's a friend's meeting house and sit with the friends on Sunday morning. If you've never been to a friend's meeting, the friends Sunday morning sit in silence. And sometimes someone speaks in the silence, but they'll let you sit in silence and meditate. But it's really helpful to sit with other people to meditate. If you get into it and find it useful or meaningful, the meditation, then it can be one way to further the meditation practice is to do more of it. And we have a we do what we call retreats, meditation retreats. And we have them here at the IMC, which you can come for a day. Usually they're on Saturday, and you can come for a day. And actually, you can come for half the day or come for 1 hour or something. We're very relaxed here about the coming and going. So you can come and participate as much as you want, meditate, you know, for a few hours and then go. And sometimes by having a more concentrated, fuller period of time to experiment with the meditation can allow you kind of to open something new and open new vistas and possibilities for you in that field. You're all welcome to come back here to IMC. We have schedule of activities throughout the week, and you can, newsletter and other places has the list, the schedule of things. I think pretty much everything is open and suitable to anybody. You can just come and sit quietly, and if the meditation is too long, you can just open your eyes and look at the ceiling. No one's making you meditate. But please feel welcome to come here. We're by design, we want to be certainly a welcoming community, but also a place where it's relatively easy to come and go, recognizing people have family and work and many things that makes it difficult to show up on time and things. We don't have membership here, but I like to say if you want to be a member, you are. And if you don't like to be if you don't like to join organizations that have memberships, since no, we don't have members here. So if you didn't pick up a copy of my book, we have lots of books here to give away. If you want to have some essays on mindfulness practice, we can pull them out of the cupboards for you. There's a newsletter. And what else? So next week, so for the next 4 weeks on Wednesdays, we have what's called a beginner's practice group. And that's kind of meant to be a continuation of this intro class. And some senior practitioners here at the center lead the group. There's a flyer for it out there. And it's a chance to get a little bit more instruction, practice, meditate a little bit more like we did today, and then have some discussion and have questions and get support for beginning a regular meditation practice. And the people, there's a series of people coming, but they're wonderful people, and they have a lot to offer, and so please come by and back and try it. So the next 4 weeks at 7:30 here. And Diana is one of those people who's going to be involved, and she has had a long yoga background and practicing for a long time, and she was interested in helping people who might have still some challenges with their meditation posture. If you have challenges in sitting on the floor, even in a chair, if you want to stay after tonight, she'd offer for a short period, a teeny 10-minute posture clinic. So you can just come up to her here. And Richard, there is at the console. He's been a long-time practitioner here also and does some of the intro teaching, and he can also answer questions you might have. And is Shin Kwan still here? Yeah, she's in the back. All you see is a hand. But Shin Kwan, the woman who keeps a hand high, she has been here before, so you can also ask her questions or come up and ask me questions if you have anything. And so be happy to see you back here at IMC, and I want to thank you for participating in the class, and I hope this is beneficial for you. Thank you. Thank you.